Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on CARE Radio. Great to have you with us. Have to thank our Sports Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Exchange Bank, and Petro Convenience Store. Tom Couts here, Gus with me, and our football schedule, as always, packed. And tomorrow night, we're going to get to see another place, because we've had a great season of going to various venues already this year. This is going to be another one as we go down to Easton, Kansas, and it'll be an NEKL game. Our first look at both Mar-Hill Mount Academy, and they'll be at Pleasant Ridge at 7 o'clock kickoff there. And then Saturday, Benedictine is going to be back home. They are going to be hosting a rejuvenated Graceland program. You'll hear the pregame here on CARE. How about 12:30? Kickoff at Wilcox Stadium, 1 o'clock Saturday, Benedictine football. Well, Gus, what do you think? We look back over the shoulder last week, and, wow, we saw a Valley Falls team go to Horton, jump out to a big lead. Horton battled back, turned into an entertaining ball game. But Valley was able to hold on to take the win up in Horton Friday night.
Yeah, for Valley Falls, they get their first win returning to 11-man football. And so for them, they played really well. They got behind early, and it kind of looked like it was going to be tough. But, you know, Horton was able to then get back in it, make it a close game. But when it was said and done, you know, you talk about two teams that were very evenly matched on Friday night.
There were some great games that went on around the conference. Jackson Heights at home, a substantial win over Pleasant Ridge, 49-28. We know Jackson Heights is extremely good. You saw Wabunsee travel to JCN, winning at 24-8. The McLeod game with Mar-Hill Mount Academy was canceled. McLeod was unable to come to that game, and so that game did not happen. And right now, I don't know. You can narrow down to probably two teams that are the cream of the crop in the NEKL, and ACCHS is right at the top. And they had no difficulty with Oskaloosa shutting them out, 48-0. Tigers, we've seen them already this year. They're playing really, really well.
Yeah, for the Tigers, they seem to have a lot of things going right. You know, they're playing well. They've figured out some of their pieces. Jackson Heights and ACCHS are both 3-0 on the season and league play as well. And right now, I think that, you know, we saw the Tigers 2 weeks ago. They're a tough out. I mean, like, they play really good defense. They take care of the football. They don't commit a whole lot of penalties. All those things add up to being a good football team.
And, of course, we like to look at the place where it all starts, that line play. They've got some big, strong guys, and they do a great job up front. So that's a formidable group when you put that all together.
Yeah, they're big and they're young, right? I mean, the Tigers have bunch of underclassmen yet, so they've got some staying power.
Scores from around the Meadowlark from last week, and Atchison makes a road trip, but it wasn't too hard for Coach Smith and the Phoenix as they rolled over Harmon.
Yeah, a handful of one-sided games in the Meadowlark League last week is, yeah, Atchison, defense, you're going to be happy, didn't give up anything. Offense, you're going to be thrilled, just scored 72, so all around, a good day for Coach Smith and his crew.
Highland Park was at home. They dispatched Sumner 63-36. So this brings me to a question for you, and maybe it's mostly speculation at this juncture, but Highland Park came into this conference a very unsuccessful team. I mean, they've been struggling. They hadn't won a game in forever, okay? Now they make the change. They move into the new Meadowlark, and they come out gangbusters. They are dominating the teams they played this year, and they are playing well. Is it just because you've got a coach that's now been there a couple of years and they're beginning to incorporate and beginning to assimilate all those things that he has brought to the program? Is it the change in the schedule? What has happened to this Scotty team?
I'd say it's pieces of both, right? Like, you know, year one, I think you come in and you try to institute some things, but, you know, it takes a year for everybody to kind of get on board with, you know, your vision and where you're going. But I think some of it, too, is, you know, they're stepping down into this Meadowlark League and playing some of the teams like, okay, let's be honest, in the Meadowlark, this year there's probably three teams, right? It's Atchison, Washington, Highland Park. And right now, they haven't played. They'll play Washington the last week of the year. they haven't played Atchison. That'll happen here in a couple weeks. I mean, so right now I think some of it, too, is just a change of scenery has worked well and a change of schedule. You know, you're playing Harmon, not Hayden. Okay? I mean, I think some of those things at the end of the day probably make it a little easier for Highland Park this year. And, again, that also will help with your confidence as the season progresses.
So sometimes that fresh start really gives you a fresh start.
Yeah.
Well, they've done well. Going down the rest of the games at the Meadowlark, it was Wyandotte at Schlegel winning it 25-10. And Bonner Springs at home was able to get by Washington 31-12. Bonner Springs is awfully good team.
Yeah, not very many close games in the Meadowlark last week. Games going on this week in the Meadowlark, it'll be Schlegel at Atchison. It's homecoming. Wamego will travel to Washington. Harmon will be at Highland Park. Harmon looking for their first points of the season. And Wyandotte will travel over to Sumner.
You know, I know it's homecoming at Atchison. There's a shortage of cheap TP all over the city. Just so you know. I mean, but if you want some, all you got to do is just drive down the street.
Just
there's
go
plenty.
Find a yard, right?
There's plenty. NEKL. Again, the game we're going to have here on Care Radio tomorrow night, it'll be Mariehamn Academy at Pleasant Ridge, 7 o'clock game. It gets interesting here, all right? Now it's not all just conference v. conference games. We're getting into some of those, you know, some district games, and ACCHS is going to get a real test as they travel out to Rossville to play the Dogs. Fantastic venue. They won't play on a nicer field all season. I don't care where they go. And they probably won't play a better opponent, no matter where they go.
Yeah, you know, Rossville, one of those teams who has been predominantly good, right? Won a lot of state titles, been very successful as of recently. I'm going to tell you, the Dogs coming into this game looking to get back to 500, right? Now, they have played a tough schedule. They went to St. Mary's and lost 20-13. Week two, they were at Riley County and came away with a nice win there, 36-15. And then last week, they made a short trip over to Hayden, and, well, Gage Boulevard was not kind to them. They lost 55-34 to Hayden. So, you know, the Bulldogs looking to get kind of back on that winning streak and get back going. But you look at District 3, it includes ACCHS, Mariehamn Academy, Silver Lake, Pleasant Ridge, Rossville. They will then match up with District 4, which includes Nemaha Central, Minneapolis, Sabetha, Horton, Riley County.
Yeah, Minneapolis, a new team into this, a little further north central Kansas to get to them.
So,
there's only one other game going on, really, between two conference opponents, and that is going to be McLouth, and we've not heard any changes in this. McLouth is set to host Jefferson County North Friday night. NEKL teams also in action is the Valley Falls team we were just talking about, having seen them last week. They travel out to Mission Valley. Jackson Heights goes up to Riverside. It'll be Nemaha Central at Horton, and rounding it out, Oskaloosa will be at home with maybe the best team in the state of Kansas, St. Mary's.
Talk about districts and Class 1A District 3 has JCN, St. Mary's, Valley Falls, McLouth, Mission Valley, Oskaloosa. So, just to give you a little heads up on what District 3 looks like, they match up with District 4, which includes Centralia, Jackson Heights, Troy, Riverside, and Onega. Whoever thought the geography there worked, I'm not really sure.
The lines have changed a lot.
Okay. So,
well, there you have that, and best of luck to those teams. And again, we're going to be with Mariehamn Academy and the Rams down at Pleasant Ridge Friday night. Flipping over now, looking at a little Benedictine football as we've got a couple of interviews coming up here as the program continues. Tell you what, guys, the Ravens made that horrible, long, ugly 6.5-plus hour road trip up to Dubuque, and they didn't let it bother them too much. They handled Clark with, you know, relative ease, 36-18. Clark's not a bad team. In fact, they are a much better team than they have been, and they may be, you know, they may be respectable in this conference at some point before it's all said and done, but last week it was the Ravens looking good.
Yeah, the Ravens look good. They won 36-18. Fabian Njika was the defensive player of the week in the conference, as he should have been, right? Like, he had the interception late in the game. But I think, for me, the big play was, as Clark was going in for it looked like a touchdown, Fabian reaches out and just steals the ball away from, you know, the quarterback, and all of a sudden it was another turnover for Clark. Yeah. Talking about Clark, I think for me the thing is, they're not going to be any better in this conference if they don't cut down the turnovers, right? Like, we talked about it all day on Saturday. The turnovers are way too many, and again, you can't do that if you're going to beat some of these better teams in the conference.
Talking about some of the better teams in the conference, scores from last week saw Grandview at home with Mid-America. We talked about this in the show last week, that we'd be interested to gauge, you know, Mid-America's been playing pretty respectably.
Mid-America's been playing okay, yeah. And they're putting up a lot of points, right?
Yeah, they were.
And that stopped real quick.
Because Grandview, 51-0 over Mid-America. And I expected Grandview probably to win, but I didn't think it would be just a drubbing like that.
There was a game here that I didn't expect, probably two of them, right? There were two games in the conference that I would have wrote off, and then they came back to bite us.
One of them was in Nebraska?
Yeah.
Okay. How about the Oak Bowl, Peru State? They played host to Baker, and we were also looking to see gauge, you know, where Baker's at, having now seen Peru, and, you know, as the schedule is moving along, and Peru is able to hang on as Baker's driving at the end of the game with a chance to win. But the Bobcats hold him. Peru wins it 19-14.
Yeah, now Baker on a two-game losing streak.
Then Missouri Valley turns down and goes on the road to a Culver-Stockton team. And, again, Valley's winning some games. Culver's not. And I expected neither of those things to happen. I didn't think Valley was going to be very good. And I thought Culver might be on a rebound, but not the case. 28-16, it was all Vikings Saturday.
Yeah, so I still can't figure out that Paul Troth program probably for the last 6 years.
Yeah, I
feel like in the last 6 years, I'm not sure what has happened to Valley. Then now they're starting to come back a little bit, and I'm not really sure how far back they've come. But that's a big win for them over Culver Stockton, because Culver will finish second in the North, maybe third. I'm gonna go on the record. Culver finishes third because I see Peru making it to second in the North.
Maybe.
Just because Peru knocked off, you know, Baker. I feel like maybe they're, you know, got enough pieces to figure it
out. But if they're not careful, Graceland's going to pass him.
Yeah.
Because Graceland was at home, and they beat Central Methodist, which in itself is not, you know, a great feat, because Central Methodist is winless on the year. Although the Eagles did score in the game, which is kind of a change for them.
Yep.
Hadn't scored all season, but Graceland was able to persevere, winning that one at home 26-20 in the Bruce Jenner Sports Complex.
And then the game that wasn't.
Yeah, Evangel William Pitt. Okay, if you're Evangel, it's, you know, you're making a farewell tour. Okay, you're going around, you're blowing kisses to the crowd as you walk out for the very last time, except this time it was all umbrellas, because you make that long trip all the way up there, and then you don't play a game. That's got to be painful, man.
Yeah, I think the rain, the storms, the lightning, all of it added up, and they just said, hey, let's go back home. And you're driving through storms and stuff all the way home. I'm sure that was just a terrible trip up, terrible trip back, and nothing to show for it.
Now, let's just put this shoe on a different foot. Let us say that it was not Evangel. Let us say it was Benedictine who had traveled to Penn. Okay? Mm-hmm. Weather just went south. It was terrible. We've been up there in a lot of rainy days, ugly days, but never like this. So what do you do? If you're Benedictine, do you spend another night and say, get those officials here, we're going to play this thing Sunday?
No.
Is it just done, too?
Yeah. I think the only way you would play it again is if you were a close team, right? Like a...
Grandview?
Grandview would have probably figured it out another day. But for William Penn, it doesn't matter. They're not doing anything with this season, right? It's just kind of a lost cause, and so they're probably okay not playing that. And Evangel is okay, but, I mean, I don't expect huge things from them this season. So, again, I don't really think at the end of the year somebody goes, man, I really needed that W.
Right. And from a pragmatic view, let's be honest, for Evangel, you got to be a little unhappy. You spent all the money, okay? You spent a lot of money busing that far across the country, feeding 100 and some guys, you know, you probably spent a night.
And that's the other problem is, let's say you do try to turn around and play Sunday, you got to find hotel rooms for all these guys. You got to feed them two more times than you anticipated. That would have been probably just a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, this week has got some games that are pretty interesting. And William Penn, now that they're on this roll, they traveled out of Missouri Valley. I think a good match of a couple of, you know, middle-of-the-road kind of a teams. You've got Clark at Baker. And for Baker, this is a huge game. I mean, even though it's not in your division, they've got to like, right the ship before the, you know, this division play is getting close.
If they lose this, they don't make the playoffs.
No.
Right? Like,
you
can't make playoffs with three losses, and you can't make the playoffs if you drop out of the top 25. Now, Clark will be a little amped up because Coach Reggs is going back to Baker, and they've got some players, you know, former Baker players, you know, their quarterback and things. At the end of the day, I just don't see this being a close game at all. I really think that Baker rights the ship and runs away with that thing. And watch this next week. We'll talk about that. I was wrong.
A couple of teams who are struggling. Culver Stockton is going to be in Fayette with Central Methodist on Saturday. Those are all afternoon, the 1 o'clock games, 4 1 o'clock games Saturday.
Yeah, that could be an interesting game, right? Culver Stockton looking to right the ship. You're talking about Central Methodist, who has just kind of fallen apart this year. I mean, there are some games this week. I feel like I'm more excited about these games than I was last week's games.
How about Evangel's coming home? Well, home for them down at Nixon, Missouri at Eagle Stadium, and they're going to be hosting Grandview. So for Grandview, the shoe gets on the other foot a little bit as now they have to make the long road trip.
Yeah, and it's a night game, so I just don't think Grandview, though, has any problems with Evangel.
Okay, let's just do the numbers just for the heck of it. So Grandview travels to Evangel. You play at 6 o'clock, game's over 8:30, you're out of there at 9:30 by the time you get everybody loaded up and all of that stuff. And then you're, you know, six hours home.
Yeah, I mean, you're home by 3.
You're home 3 a.m.-ish, you know, something like that. So that's a long day. And you got Peru going to ODAC. They're going to be playing Peru at Mid-America Nazarene, another 6 o'clock ball game Saturday. Coming off, bouncing off of a big win, and Mid-America reeling from a huge loss. Peru, this is a chance for Peru to make a little hay.
Yeah, so this will probably be, we can look forward and find it out. Basically the last night games of the conference, right? Because most of these teams, as we've learned throughout the time, have had a thing built in their schedule. All games in September, or before October 1st, are night games, right? And the last night game we're going to have in the conference is coming up...
Middle of October, Thursday game.
Yeah, it's a Thursday game, and that's because it's Grandview and Penn, and I'm sure that's just some kind of a rivalry thing.
Well, I'm sure that the football stadium is busy. You know,
probably
maybe
with soccer
too,
or
because they both,
other things. Yeah.
Neither Grandview nor Penn, and it's at Penn, neither one of them have their own field.
So, you know, and next week will be our last week of round one, right?
Yes.
I mean, we're rapidly approaching the end of playing your outer division games, and so then you get October the 8th, you're going to be off, and then, boom, it'll be a sprint to the finish. I'm not sure how we're almost halfway through the season.
It's remarkable, but, and let's look over at the national rankings, because it's been a very good first half so far for Benedictine, who's begun the season unranked, had gotten into the polls, and then last week made another big jump.
Yeah, so for Benedictine, they started unranked, and now they've pushed their way all the way to number 12 in the country. Behind College of Idaho, who jumped from 17 to 11, Indiana Wesleyan, a very new program, I believe, went from 13 to 10. So, you know, the top 6. So the top 6 haven't moved. And that's kind of the problem, is that those top handful of teams just aren't really going to move. So your goal is to get somewhere around 6, 7, 8. You know, I mean, I think that's realistic at this point. Because, again, those teams don't lose ahead of you, you're not going to jump them.
Right. Get in the top 10.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
And so some of the things that you're going to look at is that, like, Southwestern has still got to play Bethel, Kansas, which is 14, and they've still got to play KW. So you're kind of hoping that some of these teams start to beat up on each other in the conference. But you're also looking back at that Grandview game going, man, if I would have beat Grandview, maybe you are 7. You know, I mean, like, so again, it's one of those things. But I think for Benedictine, you got to be happy with 12 because that's a good place to be in the middle of the year.
A couple of teams have made precipitous drops over the course of the last week, and they would include Kansas Wesleyan, who has fallen with their one loss now to from 9th to 18th. You fall from a really good spot to out of the hunt. And then Baker has fallen. They dropped a dozen spots from 11 to 23. Baker is 2-2, worst record in the national poll. And as we mentioned earlier in the program, you said it, their one loss from being out of the postseason. Now, Waldorf, here's a team not getting quite enough respect at 4-0. There are only 3 4-0 teams in the national poll. Grandview is 4-0. Southeastern Florida is 4-0 out of the Sun Conference, and Waldorf is 4-0, and they got into the poll. They're only at 24, but a team on the rise.
Yeah, Coach Finley's got that team playing really well right now, and so I think they're a team that, you know, you probably go ahead and keep an eye out for. But, you know, it's early on in the season. There are a lot of teams flying up and down. There are some teams I also don't understand, like, that are playing some big schedules, and I feel like the last 2 years, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I feel like the last 2 years, these voters have really made you pay for losing games, right? Like, before, you'd fall one or two, but I mean, like, you're starting to see teams just tumble. Concordia, Michigan went from 7 to 15. I mean, you talk about KW losing one game to Bethel, and they dropped 9 spots to 18. But I also think some of that is you're not going to give the KCAC a whole lot of love, you know? I mean, like, you're going to say, well, you should have won that game.
Well, it's an interesting time. We're looking forward to bringing you high school ball tomorrow night, Benedictine Saturday at 1. And we got a lot more stuff going on. We're going to take a quick break as Sports Look continues here on K-Radio right after this. We've got Logan Fritz with us. He's the AD at Pleasant Ridge High School. Coach Fritz, how you doing today, man? I appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Fall time, football season's well underway, but while we talk a lot about football, there are so many things, and as AD, you're associated with all the things going on around school, and how's the fall been going so far at Pleasant Ridge?
It's been very busy early on. We had homecoming early on in the year, so we hit the ground running. But volleyball team's doing great. Cross country team's doing really well. FFA is doing well. They have a couple competitions this next week. We also have our high school choir concert coming up this next week. So everything's off to a smooth start, thankfully. Hopefully we can keep it that way and finish strong.
Well, you mentioned, first of all, volleyball. They have been very successful so far this season. That's great.
Yeah, so far we're 15-6, doing really, really well. Have a good solid group of juniors that are leading the way and very competitive. So hopefully they can do some things later on this year, but time will tell. We'll
see. And who's your coach for the volleyball team?
Our head coach is Danielle Langley.
Okay, so if I'm just guessing here, did she bring some strong home roots to this team?
We're all out here trying to change the culture a little bit and change some things in a positive manner, get it back to where it should be. So she has brought some things outside. She's from Iowa, so bringing some things of what she did up there in her playing days, bringing it down here, trying to get it to work down here.
And cross country, I talked to a lot of ADs. Some schools, you know, they're like, we'd like to get some more kids out. Some of them have really, really remarkable turnouts. How are the numbers and so forth for you there?
Our numbers for cross country, I feel, are pretty good. And talking with our head coach, Chad Hendricks, he agrees as well. We have some really good athletes, both on the boys and girls side. So they're excited moving forward. Quite a few young kids as well. I know they have quite a few sophomores and juniors in there. But the seniors, just to name one, Drake Duncan is having a really good job. Tristan Baker is another one. Just a couple seniors that are doing really well in the cross country this year.
I got a special place in my heart as a former cross country runner. You wouldn't know it to look at me today, but you know those guys maybe don't get enough recognition. And certainly, it's not the kind of sport that it's easy to go out and watch a game like volleyball or football or one of the other events. You know, because it's kind of hard to keep track of them as they go miles around a golf course or a park or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very difficult to watch cross country when they're running a 5K each day and it's spread out, like you said, over a golf course or over a field. So very, very difficult. And unfortunately, you know, it's typically just the parents that go out and support. But we do have our home cross country meet here down at the University of St. Mary on October 8th. So hopefully we can get some more support out there for them because they are fun to watch and very competitive.
You mentioned Future Farmers of America. They always have, you know, a lot of competitions and events during the course of the year. And you mentioned that they've got some things going on.
Yeah, coming up this next week, they're up at Nemaha Central doing some competitions up there. They've had a great running so far, and hopefully can continue that. But, yeah, it's a great program out here. It's kind of what we're known for at Pleasant Ridge is our FFA program under the new the leadership of Stephanie McPherson. She's in her second year, so hopefully she can continue that moving forward.
And then, of course, you know, these last couple of mornings, it's been cool, and that just lets us know that the winter sports are going to be here just absolutely before we know it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Having a 100-degree day on Tuesday, all the way down into the 60s for today and Friday night, man, it's a big change of pace, but definitely ready for it. The kids were excited that it was cooling down, which definitely means those winter sports are gearing up, basketball, wrestling. We got Scholars Bowl. We got a number of winter activities to stay on top of.
Who's your, do you know who right off the top, Scholars Bowl coach? Because, again, there's another one of the groups that does a lot and works hard and competes, but doesn't always just get enough of our attention.
Absolutely. Sandy Gerst is our head Scholars Bowl coach. She does a great job with the kids. I apologize for not knowing it off the top of my head, but they did really well last year in regionals and in league, I believe, finished in the top three in league. So excited to see what they can do this year. I have a number of students in class, so I am excited to see what they can do.
And then, of course, you know, we'll wrap up with football because not only is the conference tough, like it is always tough, but you know, you're going to be having some district games coming up here very, very shortly, and there's some quality competition in your district, Coach.
Absolutely. Anytime you have Silver Lake and Rossville in your district, it's never going to be an easy district. And then to make it even more difficult, the state decided to add in Effingham, Atchison County, and Mar Hill. So, yeah, definitely one of the more difficult districts in the state. And then you pair that with our crossover district for the first round of the playoffs, and you're looking at Riley County, Sabetha, and Nemaha Central. So it doesn't get any easier. If you get past and get a seeding into the playoffs, you're going to end up playing somebody really good again. But, I mean, you have to beat them to get to where you want to go.
And we look forward to coming down there and the game Friday night. And, of course, what I love about a couple of things that I just absolutely love down there, number one, the field is always fantastic. It's usually got the most thick, lush grass throughout the entire season, so your grass crew is wonderful. And you guys do the best job of not only turning out fans, but yeah, everybody's got the gear going on. I mean, the school spirit and all of that is just so strong at Pleasant Ridge.
Absolutely, and I think that helps a lot with our Ram Nation store. Under new leadership of Kelly Heim this year, taking over for Coach Jay from last year and Mrs. Nichols from the year before. So she's going to get that back to where it has been in the past, but you're absolutely right. They do a great job of coming out and supporting from the community. They always have their Pleasant Ridge gear on, supporting the kids in every aspect, in every manner. But, yeah, no, I'm excited because it does get fun at this football stadium on Friday nights.
Logan Fritz, AD at Pleasant Ridge High School. Appreciate your taking some time out, catching us up with things in the Ram Nation, and we wish you and all of your teams the very best of luck as the fall season and moving into the winter season go on.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Joined here by George Papagiorgio, one of the coaches on the Benedictine football staff. Coach, it's good for you to take some time out. I know it's busy, but I appreciate it, man. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Tom. Just hanging around the office. Not much to do today, so.
Yeah, like there's nothing going on, nothing
right,
special.
Right.
Hey, first of all, I've been talking to the coaches that have worked with Coach Wilcox during the course of the year, and it's a great chance to talk to you about it. First of all, we got to get a little George Papagiorgio background. Tell us about home. Where are you from? Where were you raised?
My wife Michelle and I are both from the Seattle area, and so I grew up in a Norwegian and Scandinavian Swedish fishing community called Ballard, which if you have ever seen the reality show Deadliest Catch, that's where a lot of those guys live. So that's where I'm from originally, is that part of Seattle.
And so you're right on the coast, and you're you know, a bay kind of a guy.
Right. We're used to 40 degrees and drizzly rain, so that's been kind of our lifestyle.
Tell me about, then you went to high school, of course, there, and you were a football guy. Where'd you play?
I was fortunate to play at the University of Washington under Coach Don James, and one of my teammates was a young man called named Warren Moon, so I got to stand on the sideline and watch Warren throw touchdowns.
That's awesome. Before you got to college, where'd you play high school ball at? What was the school?
I was actually, again, born in Ballard, but my folks moved to the suburbs, and they went to Shoreline School District, so I played for the Shoreline Spartans.
And what was your position?
I started out as a lineman. I was a center. And then my senior year, they decided to move me to a blocking back and made me a guard with an eligible number as a fullback.
So did you score a touchdown in high school, Coach?
Yes, I believe I scored one, and I also did the same thing in college.
That's fantastic. So in college, you were, again, you stayed up in the Pacific Northwest, and after you got out of school, was your goal always to be a coach? Is that what you just knew you wanted to do?
Well, not really. I kind of thought I was, well, being Greek, you had a couple choices. You could either go into the priesthood or you could go into professional life as your parents wanted you to do. So I tried a little bit, a semester of kind of early law school. I didn't like it, and I was working in my father's businesses, and then I had a lucky break and got into coaching.
What'd Dad do?
Dad was he was an engineer, but he sold men's clothes. He designed textiles, and he had some side businesses like most Greeks. They had a restaurant, so I worked there, and I realized that was way too hard a way to make a living.
And so you decided, I'm going to go on to college, and I'm going to play college football, and your studies went from there. So what did you major in college?
My undergraduate was political science, and again, that's why I was dabbling with the idea of going into law school. But when Michelle and I got married, I became a graduate assistant at Portland State University in Portland, Oregon, and I had an advisor, and we discussed things. And she felt, and I agreed, that it would be better to go into maybe the sociology type and get a master's in social work. But then that transitioned into getting a master's in education, and there came the hook of the coaching.
And so as you got through college, then you coached in the Northwest, right?
Yes, I coached for a gentleman. Again, I coached with Coach James as a student assistant. Then he had me there as a graduate assistant, even though I wasn't really working toward my master's at that time. It was graduate student in name only. I went to Portland, coached at Lewis and Clark College with a great coach named Don McCarty. He was a legend in the Portland area. I also coached at Pacific of Oregon. Unfortunately, Pacific dropped football, and that's how I started to move around a little bit more. 1 year at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, and then by luck, a former player of mine was coaching at Kansas Wesleyan, and he put my name up for a position at Bethel College, and I became the head coach there for 5 years.
So I was just wondering how a Pacific Northwest guy finds himself in the heartland, so an opportunity arose.
Yes, we enjoyed our time at Bethel. I got to know Coach Wilcox. We were both National Raiders, and actually my first meeting with the National Raiders, I walked into the 7 o'clock morning breakfast. All the gentlemen, including Coach Wilcox, were in shirts and ties and coats. And here comes Coach Pops walking in with the sweatpants on.
Hey, you got to go with what's comfortable, right? Come on.
Right. And so I got to know Coach that way. And then I had an experience a long illness with my father. And when he passed, Coach asked me to come aboard as the assistant head coach. And I've been here ever since.
So Benedictine at that time, a different conference, all that, you were kind of familiar with. who they were, but you probably, when you first got in, weren't really familiar with the school and the program.
No, I had only known them by reputation. I was in the Kansas Conference, and again, but we were all in the NAI and in the Midwest, so I got to know Coach, again, as a Raider. He brought me over for lunch. I thought it was to talk about rating, and next thing I know, he's talking to me about joining the staff.
Well, it's been a wonderful time, and time has flown. How long ago was that? I mean, the years go by pretty quickly.
Well, if you compare myself to Coach Gartmeier, Coach Murphy, Coach Stammers, the tried and true, loyal, staunch assistants of Coach Wilcox, the ones that have built the program with him, I'm one of the new guys. And so this year will be my 18th year.
Only 18 years, Coach? You're a rookie yet.
That's right. I'm still learning my way around the program.
Well, since you've been at the program, you have coached various different groups of guys out there. I mean, well, first you might go through the ones you coached, and then if there's a favorite, I'd love to hear about him.
Well, I started out here coaching the running backs for Coach Wilcox and was very fortunate to have some top players, including some All-Americans here at Benedictine, Josh McAllister, John Willits, just to name a few, and then I was transitioned into the offensive line.
And, of course, line work, that's what you were talking about, that had kind of been your first foot in the door.
Yes, that's what I was very comfortable with, but in reality, if you think about my resume, I've literally coached every position there is on the field, including quarterbacks, but I would say I'm a pretty terrible quarterback coach.
So you were even on the defensive side of the ball at some point.
Yes, I've coached everything, including the secondary, linebackers, and defensive line. Defensive line is a lot of fun. You put your hand on the ground and go, go, go. Offensive line, you have to worry a little bit more about which way you're going. But I think it's still fundamentals.
I've heard that defensive coaches, the best defensive coaches have been on the offense because they know something about what's going on the other side of the ball and maybe some things to anticipate and how to counter them.
I would agree. Our head coach at the University of Washington, Don James, the late Don James, he would do that automatically. If you joined his staff as a student assistant or a graduate assistant, he would automatically move you from the side of the ball that you played on and have you coach on the other side so you would learn that part of the game.
Now, when you began coaching offensive line here at Benedictine, you were stepping into the big shoes because that had always been Coach Wilcox's baby, kind of.
Yes, and needless to say, he hasn't forgotten where the diapers are. He still keeps a strong focus on what those guys up front are doing.
Well, there's, you know what, we could always pick up a new thing or two, don't you think?
Definitely. He and I, Coach Wilcox, are cut from the same cloth in terms of the beliefs we have with what the line needs to do, the kind of fundamentals we want to teach and coach, and so it was a pretty easy transition.
I have always been, and Gus also, an offensive line fan, because these are the guys that don't get enough credit. We love to say their names as often as we can because they don't get the props and they're not scoring the touchdowns, but all good teams must have a great offensive line.
Yes, we've been very fortunate. I would say one of the things that we're proud of is how many of our guys have become postseason recipients of academic and athletic awards here, and hopefully this year will be another great year for that.
You were telling me one day when I was up here visiting, as I like to hang out up here at the Amino with you guys when I can, that you and some of the staff up here with Patrick Hodapp, you've been working to kind of almost redefine how you want your offensive linemen to be physically and with their strength and their size and their speed and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've kind of done with some of these guys?
Well, I was fortunate to have a little different coaching experience in the Arena League, where you're playing inside a hockey rink or a basketball facility with turf. And so those athletes had to be a little lighter, a little quicker, and so we would try to find kids that maybe didn't have 30% body fat, were more in the 20s. And talking with Patrick Hodapp, who's a tremendous scientist in the field of training the athlete and transitioning their body composition, he and I started working together to change our athletes that are the big guys from that kind of bigger, heavier guy to a little bit more leaner, quicker, stronger athlete.
And obviously, I see you weighing them in, and you know they keep a check on all of that. How's that going?
It's great. Patrick is the one that tests their body composition, their body fat, early before the season starts, and then Patrick, not the coach, gives them the goal weight to reach out. It's 5-10 pounds. It's nothing astronomical, but the guys really get into it. And every 2 weeks, we weigh them in, and lo and behold, after a year, 2 years, it's amazing how it'll change how their body's made up. They become stronger, leaner. They may still weigh 280 or 300 pounds, but instead of carrying 30% body fat, they're down into the low 20s.
And that obviously makes a difference, you know, for not only their strength, but probably the stamina that they bring to the game.
I agree. It keeps them, knock on wood, out of the training room for injuries. It allows them to play longer at a high level throughout the game. And then an added benefit when they graduate is it's easier for them to drop that extra weight because they don't have as much body fat on them. They're a little leaner athlete.
Tell me what's, as you go through the practices and you go through getting ready, you know, starting way, way back, what's one of your most favorite things? What do you love about the coaching or love to see the guys do? I mean, tell me some of the joys for you in this coaching profession.
Well, there's a couple things. I think one of them is that the guys realize, and this is something that Coach Wilcox, Coach Gartmeier, Coach Murphy, Coach Stammers, all the coaches here at Benedictine, we believe that the players are not playing for us. We're coaching for them. And we look at it, and again, I'm going to use Coach Wilcox and Coach Gartmeier. When they have us recruit a young man, they always say, make sure he's the young man that you want to spend part of your life with. So we're able to bring in people that we can develop great relationships with.
You touched on the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, recruiting. On my weekly visits with players, a phenomenal number of guys say, you know why I'm here? Coach Pops. You do a lot of recruiting. I mean, it's got to be a great joy to meet the kids and meet the families and go out and help bring them into the fold.
Well, if you look at the numbers, I would say first and foremost, Coach Wilcox will bring in far and away the largest numbers, Coach Gartmeier, Coach Murphy, probably 2 and 3, depending on the year. And the reason some of those kids say that is because they are enthusiastic transfers, and I have the awesome responsibility of bringing in the majority of the transfer kids.
And because of that, you know, you are recruiting not just offensive linemen. I mean, I've talked to guys on every position, and you've been involved with so many.
Well, again, I go back to my training and my experience. Since I have coached every position, including the Q, it gives me a little bit more comfort level when I'm watching the film, meeting the young man, meeting their parents, talking to their coaches, that this is the right fit for Benedictine.
And so when you talk to the kid, before you talk to the kid, you know this is the guy I want, I mean, and he's met your personal and the school criteria.
Yes, again, we believe that they would be very fortunate to be here at Benedictine, and we also believe we'd be very fortunate to have them here. And as long as both sides understand that, it's an easier sell.
Talk about being in a fortunate circumstance. I'll get ready to let you go here because you've got things to do. But we've also been talking to coaches who've been with Coach Wilcox, who's gotten into the Benedictine Hall of Fame, you know, in his 40th season here. How great has it been to be around a guy who's, you know, got to be a mentor, even though, you know, it's not like you're some, you know, 21-year-old who's just starting, but he's still got to be a mentor to you, you know, in your career.
Well, without a doubt, I've said this to the team on various occasions. I've said it to anybody who would listen. Larry Wilcox resurrected my career because I had stepped away after my father passed, and he's the one who brought me back and gave me a new sense of why I wanted to coach, and I'll be forever grateful for that.
And the very last thing is the hours that you spend here and on the road recruiting and up at practice and going to games and traveling, none of that's possible without that ladies at home who's, you know, really been a huge part of helping make that dream come true for you.
I would agree. Michelle, my wife of 31 years, Alyssa, our oldest daughter, Nicole, our second daughter, who's a Benedictine grad, Lauren, who is living in Seattle, and Michaela, who's still going to college. Without all their support, I wouldn't have had the freedom and the comfort level to go out and do my job.
Coach, we appreciate your time, and we wish you and this team the best of luck moving into postseason.
Go Ravens!
Welcome back to Sports Look as we go to Rapid Fire Segment 4 and got the Kansas City Chiefs. An exciting game, maybe a little closer than Chiefs fans would like. They were able to win, though, over the Chargers, winning at 27-24. And you could look at a lot of things that happened in that game, but none bigger than the near 100-yard interception.
Yeah, the pick six by the seventh-round draft pick, right? I mean, it's a... You can look at a lot of things with that, and you can say, oh, well, it was a bad route by the receiver. Here's the deal. At the end of the day, Watson had to make the play and take it back to the house, and he did. And for Kansas City, that's another kid that they've done a good job of, you know, finding in the draft, making that kid work. That's a seventh-round pick, but he's a big guy. He's 6'3". He's able to, you know, do a lot of things. I thought the Kansas City defense answered when called upon. I mean, I don't think they were great, but again, I think they were just good enough, especially with this offense, to make that work for them against a Chargers team who a lot of people think is still one of the better teams in the AFC. And can I tell you, I'm also tired of the national narrative of, well, but the Chargers are still better than the Chiefs because the Chiefs won, but it's a home game, or the Chiefs won on a play that they shouldn't have lost on. And I'm like, at the end of the day, you know, people are making more excuses for this Chargers team and not really, you know, looking at Kansas City as being a contender.
And, again, that'll shake out a little bit, but there are a lot of people in the bear corner.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like Justin, and they think that, you know, he is. And here's the deal. I think he's a very talented athlete, but when the cards are on the table, he's just not a guy who's been able to perform. And people say, well, Patrick has such a good team. Look at Patrick's first year that he started. That defense was the worst defense in the NFL, and he still took them to the AFC title game and lost to Tom Brady. So, again, you can't pull that card on me, I don't think.
Well, the Chiefs got to get right back out there. They're going to make another road trip, two of the first three games. And yeah. Indianapolis is a team that, I'm going to tell you what, they always kind of concern me.
Right. The Colts right now are 0-2. They just got thunked by the Jaguars last Sunday. But there's still a team that I'm like, I don't like seeing them because I think for me, maybe it's a whole lot of bad memories of Colts games over the years, right? The Lynn Elliott game.
Oh, yes. You'll never forget that.
The playoff game just a couple of years ago where Luck caught his own pass and ran it into the end zone. But when it's all said and done, I mean, this is a team for the Colts that they're getting better, right? Shaquille Griffin is going to come back, or Shaquille Leonard, excuse me. Going to be back, it looks like, and playing for that defense this week. And here's the deal, Kansas City, 5.5-point favorite on the road. I think they win this game, but I do think it's a lot closer than people expect. It's a 5.5-point spread on that.
If you're ready for some football, though, tonight, you can tune in that Thursday night game if you have the appropriate cable connections. Steelers at the Browns. I can't see a lot of people getting maybe, you know, if you were in the Ohio Valley, you're a little excited about this, but there's not going to be a lot of people, I don't think, around the country really looking at this game.
Yeah, the Steelers are a team that right now they're struggling a little bit with their quarterback play of Mitch Trubisky. I think a lot of people are starting to yell that they want Kenny Pickett. If you're the Browns, this is just one of those seasons where I think it's a lost season. You're looking to next year when you get Deshaun Watson and things like that, so... I don't know. This game just doesn't do much for me. I'll turn it on for a minute, but I don't think I'll really stay glued to the TV like some of the other games this weekend.
Yeah, this weekend there's going to be one glued to game. That's going to be the Bills at the Dolphins. We'll see if the Dolphins are real. And the Bills are the only team right now currently ranked in the power rankings higher than Kansas City.
Yeah, and I think they should be, right? They look really good. Their defense has been on point. Josh Allen has just been there. He's not missed anything so far. So, again, Buffalo a 6-point favorite in that ballgame, over under 52, so they're expecting a few points to be scored. Considering that 52 points is the over under for that game, tonight's game, 38. Okay, so that shows you how much difference they expect in both these games. I'm interested to see what the Dolphins can do against the Bills.
People are also going to be interested to watch two future Hall of Fame quarterbacks who are going to be playing this weekend. It'll be Packers at Buccaneers, a 3:25 game on Sunday, a one-point pick'em game.
Yeah, I think this could be a NFC playoff game because I don't really like a whole lot going on in the NFC, but the Packers and Buccaneers have both, you know, won their games this year. The Bucs don't look like a Tom Brady team this year. I mean, they've struggled at times, but yet they continue to win. Over-under is 41.5. Can you believe that? Such a low number for two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I don't know. The game doesn't do much for me, but I'll be interested in it, of course, because of the two quarterbacks involved.
That all said, of course, then you go to the Sunday night, 49ers-Broncos.
So for the 49ers, they come into the season expecting Trey Lance to do big things. They couldn't get Jimmy G traded off, and now it looks like it's going to work out because Trey Lance breaks an ankle. Jimmy G is back at the starting quarterback for the 49ers. Can I tell you, their number actually got better in the desert because Jimmy G is back as their quarterback. And for the Broncos, did you catch any of that Broncos game on Sunday?
I did a little.
And at the end of the game, where they had so many delay of game penalties, the Broncos fans are counting down the play clock. I felt like I was at a basketball game where you hear people counting down the shot clock. I've never seen such a thing. If you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, you are thrilled that the Broncos paid Russell Wilson so much money and have locked him up for like the next decade. So, again, you can just write the Broncos off as being a terrible team for the next like 8 years.
Speaking of terrible teams, then there's Monday Night Football.
Yeah, well, you say that, but the Giants are undefeated right now, and the Cowboys are looking to get Gallup back this week. It'll
but still the
be
Giants are undefeated, and they're a point dog in the game.
Yeah, well, because everybody loves Cooper Rush, right? They were able to beat Cincinnati last week. So I actually think this could be an okay game. I do. I think that Dallas's defense is playing really well. The Giants are playing good football. I will probably be glued to it because I don't think it'll be a runaway like the two Monday night games were this week. I really think it'll be a close game. I don't know that it'll be a pretty game, but I think it'll be a close game.
And as we move to the NCAA Basketball National Tournament bracket. Oh, no, wait. This is football. Hold on. Wait a minute. Duke at Kansas Saturday.
Yeah, getting a little national attention with that Duke.
Again, they're undefeated teams.
Yep, two 3-0 teams is Kansas. The only undefeated Division I team in the state right now. They are, go figure this, 7.5-point favorite over Duke coming in this week. The Jayhawks look like a completely different team this year, right? I mean, and I think if they win Saturday, they will have hit the over on their anticipated wins. With I think they were 3.5 coming into the season.
I'm not sure they haven't hit it already, but yeah.
And so, anyway, KU's playing good, right? Lance Leipold has them playing, you know, clean football. They're not committing a whole lot of penalties. They're not committing turnovers. They're just finding ways to win. And I think, you know, with their quarterback right now, who, you know, everybody's talking about how great he's been playing, KU is the highest scoring offense right now in the NCAA.
I think there are people in Lincoln, Nebraska with big checkbooks who've been calling Lance Daly.
Yeah, I think so too, but I just don't think that, you know, I don't think Nebraska fan will go for that.
Kansas State is going to travel to Oklahoma State Saturday night. It's an evening game, Oklahoma, number 6 in the country for Kansas State. It would be a huge win.
Yeah, looking to bounce back from that loss at home to Tulane. And Kansas State always plays Oklahoma well. Again, would not be shocked if K-State loses to Tulane at home last week and wins at Norman this week.
All right, and one more that I've just got to throw out here. How about you got Middle Tennessee, the Blue Raiders, and Miami.
At Miami? Yeah. I mean, Middle Tennessee is a team that has played Miami a couple times, I think, already, and Miami's, you know, looking to write that check and come away with a big win. But that
Miami
hasn't
need
been
a bounce back.
That hasn't been a gimme this year for teams that get the checks. They haven't always taken the L.
No, we've seen a lot of that.
And if you're looking for Saturday night game on ABC, turn it off. If Wisconsin's going to Ohio State. Ohio State a 19-point favorite.
There you have it. Hey, our schedule's way better than that. Is tomorrow night we're going to have High school football on Care Radio from Easton, Kansas. Morehill Mount Academy at Pleasant Ridge, 7 o'clock ball game. And then Saturday, the Benedictine Ravens back on the gridiron. It's going to be a 12:30 pregame, 1 o'clock kickoff at Wilcox Stadium. Benedictine hosting Graceland. Got to thank our Sportsbook sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric Exchange Bank, and Petro Convenience. And until we reach you next time, for Gus Kautz, Tom Kautz, so long, everybody.